The hat actually looks really good.
Well, this is like this combo right here.
Yeah, it's pretty.
Is
nice.
Like every
you look like
dude.
You look like blue collar Christmas right now.
Pretty much, yeah. Okay, blue collar Christmas.
Thanks, mom and dad. This is always. How did you know?
If you get Carhartt for Christmas, you might be redneck. You might be youth pastor.
Get a Bass Pro Shop hat in your stocking.
You might be a redneck. Frat boy.
Howdy, 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 everyone.
Welcome back to another joyous episode of Texas, the show about some things Texas.
And some things redneck.
And liquid death. We've got a great episode in store for you today, but first, as always,
Tito's and Shiner, gonna be an all-nighter. Just might find her at the Whataburger line. Dance halls and women, but man, I'm wishing that I was fishing by the river tonight in Texas.
Our not sponsor, Seth, who is our first not sponsor for today's episode?
Our first not sponsor is Dick's Sporting Goods.
Dick's
Sporting Goods.
We got balls. Dick's. We've got the biggest selection of bats you can imagine. We're Dick's. Our employees work long and hard. We're Dick's.
Somebody in the naming didn't think that we could go by Rick's, so we just decided to go by Dick's.
We got rubber.
Balls.
Dick's.
Whenever you want to like buy camping gear and also a baseball,
Dicks. Whenever you're just getting into golf but want to drop 3K on it,
Dicks. Because somehow a giant shoe store and canoes go together,
Dicks. And while you're at it, throw in a 12 gauge.
Dicks.
Dicks is great, man.
Dicks is great. Dicks is like the bougie version of Academy.
Yeah, and it's like the approachable version of Bass Pro Shop.
Exactly.
Like you won't get lost or potentially drown.
Dick's. It's Bass Pro Shop for suburbanites.
Dick's. If Starbucks had a sports store, it would be
Dick's.
All right. Our
that
next
was very light not sponsor. Yeah, that was fun. That was fun.
Our next not sponsor for today's episode of Texish is Acne.
Acne.
Did you think you were hot for about 5 seconds?
Acne.
Do you have a podcast recording today?
Acne.
Did you think that the Accutane and the nightmares from it and the bone dry skin from it and the depression from it would be worth it?
Acne. Acne. Are you 32 years old and you still get acne on your forehead?
Acne. Have you even looked at the road for the past 3 hours? Have you just been scratching out your face?
Acne. It's the most fun that you can have with the least amount of time and leave yourself scarred for life. It's
acne.
Do you just like to pop them though? Like
acne.
I have this one right. It's
can you see it?
You see mine? I have one, the under nose
those
ones.
Are the worst.
They hurt.
You can't
so,
pop it.
No.
Yeah. Well,
you just
gotta
wait.
This one hurts my eye.
Yeah. That's how. Well, like okay. So one of the craziest like pimple popping story I have. It was Thanksgiving circa 2006.
Okay.
We're at Meemaw's.
Nice.
I've had this under nose one. You know, they never like whitehead. So
yeah,
you just like live
just
with
a
them.
A little mound right there.
And so like I've had this thing for, I shit you not, months. It has been months. Building, wake up, you know,
festering.
Just festering, pooling. Get, you know, all those things. Thanksgiving morning, I walk into the bathroom and it has whiteheaded and I am so excited. It might as well be Christmas.
It's Christmas morning.
And I'm like, all right, let's go.
Yeah.
It's so crowding. I walk up. I'm like a good, you know, 2 feet from the mirror. I'm getting ready. Almost before I even, it just.
Oh my
Gunner,
gosh.
It was audible. The.
Oh
then
my
when
God.
It hit the mirror, it like was like. It. Oh my God. And then for really like 5 minutes, I was just like getting all the goo out.
Yeah.
This is before you could like pimple popper, Dr.
Yeah,
pimple popper on Instagram.
You were your own satisfaction.
I was my own social media.
This was
media.
Pimple masturbation.
I almost invited the family and like, guys, you got to
check this
out.
Check
this is
out.
Insane.
Yes. Oh, dude, I had one. So I haven't had acne in a while, but sure. Recently, I guess I'm stressed.
Yeah.
I've been getting acne. For some reason, it's around my nose and I had one in my
nose.
In
your nose. Yeah.
Which just, I think that's disgusting.
It happened, but
it makes me feel like I'm going to hell because of it for some reason. Just, it's so gross and it hurts. Yeah. Just talking hurts, smiling hurts. And I was in Vegas for a client shoot and it was bothering me and it's in my nose. So I want to touch it, but I'm with clients. So mm-hmm. I can't just like, hey, I have a zit inside my nose right now.
Yeah.
hurt so bad. I wake up the next morning and I'm going to pull the rent car around to pick up the camera guy, Ryan, that I have with me. And I get in the car and I'm like, I've got to try and pop it. So I maneuver my fingers into my nose. I'm looking at the rear view mirror and I'm like, okay, I think I can pop it. And it was the kind where you just barely press audible, like sound. It shot past the rear view onto the windshield.
Yeah, it did.
And this is the noise. I know this is the noise I made. I went,
Well, it's like there's a pain to that.
Yeah.
That once it's over, you just kind of.
It's kind of invigorating.
It's invigorating.
Like,
yeah.
Whoa.
Arousing.
Yeah. A little bit.
Agony. What happened once upon a time in Texas history?
Once upon a time in Texas history. The year's 1999.
Recent.
We're in New York City.
That's not Texas.
And the Twin Towers are standing strong. And not just because it's not 9/11 yet.
Uh-huh.
It's because the Spurs have won their first ever
NBA
championship.
Spurs ball,
let's
baby.
Let's go.
F*** you, Rockets.
Knicks, technically, in that one. But
yeah, anyway. Well, I just mean of the Texas basketball
team.
Yeah,
fair enough.
Vosper's va.
So, to set the stage just a little bit, this is Tim Duncan's second year at the Spurs. Mm-hmm. This is Twin Towers. That's Tim Duncan and
the Colonel.
Robinson. David.
David Robinson.
I keep wanting to say Craig Robinson because he's...
They had the same haircut.
They do have the same haircut. So David Robinson and Tim Duncan are the Twin Towers, 7'1", 6'11".
Yeah,
they are
Robinson's
dynamo.
Robinson's kind of going out of his career.
He's kind of winding
Duncan's
it down.
Coming
Duncan's
in.
Coming in.
Yep.
Robinson is coming off of like this injury streak, right? Yeah. So their 96 season is like the worst season they ever had. Greg Popovich at the time was the manager of the team.
Yeah.
Robinson gets injured, and because of the way that the current coach was managing, Popovich fires the coach and steps in as coach himself. Yep. Mm-hmm. So this is also only Popovich's second full year as a coach. He had that half season in 96, and because that season was so bad, the Spurs get the number one draft pick. And who do they pick?
Tim Duncan.
Tim Duncan out of Wake Forest.
Yep.
Let's effing go. Mm-hmm. Who gets named MVP that year?
Yep.
2 years to the day that he was drafted.
Freaking monster.
And keep in mind, Popovich let Dennis Rodman go.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because they didn't get along.
Yeah.
And it just kind of speaks
and it's
to
Dennis Rodman.
And it's Dennis Rodman.
Yeah.
Lets him go to the Bulls. It's a trade. Mm-hmm. So they, you know, it just kind of shows how important it is to build a team around certain
and
players.
And to know what you want.
And to know what you want.
Dennis Rodman was a great player.
Oh, an amazing
and goes on
player.
To do good things.
Yeah.
He didn't fit in Popovich's
system. And Popovich's system clearly worked because starting in 1999, they go on a rampage.
Yeah,
the Spurs become one of the biggest dynasties we've had in recent memory.
That no one talks about.
And I actually like that.
I like it, but
in a way.
That, yeah, but it's like.
I get it. But think about all these superstars they have.
Yeah.
Tim Duncan just like hanging out in San Antonio.
Yeah, like you could go to the Riverwalk and be like, is that Tim?
And people would be, Tim would be like, hey.
Ew.
I assume.
Hey, that's kind of what it sounds like.
Yeah, kind of. I've never met the man.
Yeah, not yet.
I'm trying to remember the guy's name. Avery something made the last shot, 45 seconds left.
Yeah.
And they won 4-1.
Yep.
Previous to that, they swept the other two games, beating the Lakers and the Trailblazers in shutouts.
Yeah.
It is one of the best seasons the Spurs have ever had. Also, interesting to note, they won 31 out of their 36 last games.
Yep.
After losing like 6-8 in their first couple.
Yeah, they started kind of
and it was the truncated season because they had the lockout that year.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So just crazy stuff happens. All this leading up to the Spurs' first ever NBA championship.
Yeah. Of many.
Of many.
Yeah.
They would go on to win 5 in the next
seven
years.
Well, because they did 2 in a row. They had 2 in a row, and then they had the actual dynasty, which is crazy. And again, we're never going to have a last dance about Tim Duncan, about Tony Parker, about Manu Ginobili.
Because they were team players.
They were team players. They're in San Antonio, a small market team.
And I'm sure there are stories, but they
They just keep it close to the chest.
Yeah, yeah.
Popovich is one of the funniest people to see Super interviewed fun. Of all time.
Well, and starting off as the general manager
yeah.
of the team and being like,
you know what? I love the audacity. I love that. To be like, you know what? I'll do it.
And it's, just it's like a Ted Lasso moment of just yeah. being like, no.
No, this doesn't work. Just we're yeah. going to step in and do this.
We're going to step in here. Which
I also want to point out that when the Spurs do win mm-hmm. the NBA championship, when they win the finals, they do it in just overwhelming fashion.
Overwhelming fashion.
Seldom have the Spurs won a finals 7 games.
Barely.
It's always, yeah, it's 4-1. Always like 4-1. It's always 5-2. Like 4-2. Yeah, like.
Or whatever it is.
4-2.
Yeah, yeah. 4-2, yeah. Yeah. 4-2. I know.
It's always 6-1.
It's always 6-1.
Yeah, they just keep letting them play.
So in my head, I've got the way they structure this because yeah. they go 2 games, home team advantage, 3 games, 2 games.
Yeah. Yeah, just like the World Series. So
a lot of like numbers in my head. That
yeah. Math.
Right now. Math.
But Va Spurs. Shouts out to that first finals.
So that's their first one. I do also think it's interesting they started out as the Dallas Chaparrals.
Yeah.
That was their OG
the
team.
Actual franchise.
Yeah, yeah. And then they moved to San Antonio, became the Spurs like yeah. quickly. Mm-hmm. They were bought by that group of businessmen.
Yeah.
And
well, and they were originally in like the American Basketball Association, the ABA or something.
They were in the NBA. The ABA consolidated like that year.
Oh, I thought they were part of the
I don't think so. I think as the Chaparrals they were.
Oh, yeah. You're probably right.
I think.
We're going no phones
going,
on this.
Yeah, we're going no yeah. phones.
Jake, can you look that up and just say it in my ear just because it will bother me? Anyway.
Gunner in the sports knowledge.
Well, I thought they were NBA.
Anyway, you're probably right because sports is not my forte.
Well, I could also be wrong.
But either way, it's just a really cool story because yeah. they were always like a good team.
Yeah.
They were just very slept on.
Yeah.
And
a small market team.
The part that's interesting is that they then got great mm-hmm. and were still slept on.
And like have been great.
But you'll notice that like link to merch in the bio, we have Va Texas Va t-shirts.
Because not only are they one of the best sports franchises with one of the best coaches with some of the best players of all time, the single best vintage logo.
The best vintage logo.
Ever.
Ever.
When any team of any sport does throwback jerseys, nothing Spurs looks better one. Than the Spurs.
The Spurs.
Fiesta color. Fiesta.
And wouldn't you like to wear a Texas shirt, support your favorite podcast
Look,
in Spurs
we
colors?
Need to wear them right now.
But
cool shirt, man.
Thanks, man.
Anyway,
they don't sponsor us.
Yeah. So also one of my favorite dad stories.
Yeah. There's some fun ones.
Well, so because our dad is a big Michael Jordan fan, yes. but he's also a Spurs fan.
Yes.
But he's
Spurs number one.
He's a classic Jordan's the GOAT.
Yeah.
Best sports player ever seen. Got to
Which
watch
is
him,
fair.
Yada, yada.
Yeah, yeah.
Like half of the gifts well, we
and,
give
and
our
we
dad.
Are Michael Jordan. The first gift I ever gave dad was
yeah,
Michael Jordan.
Yeah, was Michael Jordan's thing.
Like he still wears Jordans.
And we give dad jerseys for,
yeah.
we give dad a Tim Duncan jersey for his last birthday.
Yeah.
Phosphorus Va. But as a joke.
And a he joke.
Did not think it was funny.
No, he didn't, but we did.
He genuinely doesn't like Dennis Rodman.
Genuinely.
Because of the way he played at the Spurs. Mm-hmm. And he's just a. He died
he's,
his ear.
He's your typical, like, it, as much as dad is interesting and weird and in a lot of ways. He's a typical sports fan.
Yeah.
No, which is kind of refreshing.
He'll be the first guy to wear finger shoes,
yeah,
like
yeah.
the finger toe shoes.
Oh, yeah.
Dennis Rodman's way too weird.
He's got to cut onions with his glasses, but like yeah. his special goggles.
Yeah.
His special goggles.
So as a joke, yeah. I got dad a Dennis Rodman Spurs jersey.
That's really funny.
And he opened it and literally goes, I'm returning this.
Yeah.
And just puts
and
it
just
back
put it back.
Back.
He didn't even pull it all the way out.
Like,
he just goes,
as
I'm returning
Rodman,
this.
And he's like, that's going.
And we're going back in.
So
and we're back.
Va Spurs Va. All right, who's our small town of the week?
Where is it?
It's the small town of the week.
Our small town of the week is in West Texas. It is Sanderson, Texas, which is
baby.
Technically a CDP, a collective something, whatever
collective
principality. There you go.
Yeah,
about 800 people, roughly
in the principality.
Yeah. It is the seat of Terrell, Texas.
Okay.
But it is its own principality.
Interesting.
It was founded in the late 1800s as part of the Southern Pacific Railway line.
Nice.
And it was where they
railroad.
That's going to come back. It was started because they needed a place to refuel and recrew.
Okay.
So what would happen is a train would drop off the crew in Sanderson. They'd refill, get a new crew. That crew would spend the night and the train coming back would pick up that crew.
Okay.
And they'd do
so
it again.
It's just this cycle.
So it's a little cycle.
I bet the town was wild when that was happening.
And it was.
Yeah.
They had an explosion of growth around that time. Yeah. Lots of historic businesses. There were some like really big name architects who came in and made like the high school and the courthouse and those things. And you can still go see those historic. There's like 50 historical landmarks in Sanderson.
Okay.
A friend of the podcast, guy who made the intro, shout out Christian Duffner. He lived in Sanderson for a little bit whenever he came back. Yeah. He worked in one of their coffee shops. Mm-hmm.
Slash auto shops
has nothing but good things to say about the town. In 1995, Southern Pacific changed their policy and they would no longer overnight cruise as they did their refuel.
Okay.
And because they were no longer overnighting cruise, the town dried up. Like,
yeah, because no one
their population
it, right? plummeted.
Was cut in half.
Whoa.
From that time, as well as their commerce, because people weren't hanging out. It was essentially like, if you're on like a big, you know, like flight path, you're going to end up with a lot of flight crew coming in and out of hotels and, you know,
it's going to be
whatever.
A very transitory.
Very much so.
There's
going to
be
thing.
A hub right by the railroad.
As you're hanging out, going toward California, you get off in Sanderson. As you're coming back, you get off in Sanderson. It just kind of became one of those commerce places. Yeah. Just couldn't survive the railroad.
Interesting.
The railroad still goes through there.
It just doesn't stop.
It stops to refuel, but it doesn't overnight crew.
It refuels and keeps going.
Keeps going. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. So you can still take a train to California and it will go through Sanderson.
And not just ride the rails, like
an actual train. Like, I don't know if the sleeper cars are there still. Like, I don't know what the situation
but
is.
But you can sit in a chair.
You can sit in a chair. Train
and stop in Sanderson.
Stop in Sanderson.
Keep going.
Because the station's in like San Antonio, I think.
Probably.
It's like in San Antonio, the train leaves at like 2 a.m.
Nice.
And you stop in Sanderson at like
2 a.m.
8 a.m.
Yeah. Oh, it goes fast.
Yeah, yeah. It's a train. Like it's booking.
It's a train.
Dude.
Look.
I've still got like.
Dad, I'm just going to go to San Antonio and get on the train.
Anyway, that's Sanderson, Texas. Really cool spot.
Dude.
Stop on your way to Big Ben. I've still got this weird like wrist pain from my IV.
Interesting.
Yeah, yeah. Because you remember how she couldn't get the blood from here?
Yeah, I remember a lot of things about her that I won't say on this podcast.
Because as we're recording, I'm 12 days out of my surgery.
Feeling pretty good. How are you feeling sitting, by the way?
I got to stand up and walk around, so I'm good.
If you need to pull a Pat McAfee.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Pull Pat McAfee, just stand up.
What I remember from your nurse is more pressure.
Oh, my gosh. It was crazy because she couldn't get blood.
Dude,
out.
She was
because I was dehydrated. You stopped drinking fluids and whatever the night before your surgery.
And she was just
and she really was just like digging in there.
Get in there. I'm watching your face get wider and wider and wider.
I'm just like I was like this kind of hurts
this
a little bit.
Kind of sucks.
She shifts from here to up here.
Yeah.
And even in here, in this vein, she's having some trouble and kind of digging. And I remember she was like kind of looking for it, and I was like ah.
Yeah.
And she's like, sorry. She had a bad morning.
Yeah, she had a very bad morning.
Howdy, 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 y'all. Normally, we bring you our not sponsors, but today we are excited to talk about an actual sponsor, Hydrate by Good Anya. You can go to goodanyaorganic.com to get Hydrate, which is an all-organic hydration powder supplement. It contains only natural organic ingredients and no sugar at all. It's made of lemon juice, coconut water, stevia, and organic sea minerals. This is the best hydration product I personally have ever used. I take it every single day when I wake up and after my sauna, and I feel incredible. Completely organic ingredients. A good friend of ours introduced us to this, and I can't go a day without it. So get yourself some Good Anya. Get yourself hydrated.
Look, it's not the 1920s anymore. Everybody has a business or a startup of some sort, whether it's a side project, whether you've ditched the silver spoon and are going all in on your side hustle to make it a full-blown business, or you have a small business already, but you've hit a plateau in growth and you're trying to find different ways to turn your marketing dollars into legitimate revenue. Well, Creators Collective is here for you. They are a full-service marketing agency offering marketing, branding, logo design, copy, video, social media management, anything custom to your business or your startup or your side hustle that will help you grow your bottom line, grow your brand reach, and just feel like you have the best dang company ever because your marketing assets are frankly better than everybody else in the game. So what you need to do right now is go to creatorscollective.us and contact them to schedule a call and find how Creators Collective can help you grow your business for the long term. That's Creators Collective. Schedule a call and just grow your freaking business with marketing that freaking works.
Yeah. Side note, link up with me here.
Sure, sure.
What about a Martin Scorsese movie about overnighting in Sanderson?
One Night in Sanderson?
Yeah, like One Night in Sanderson, just like a Wolf of Wall Street style.
Would it be a period piece? Like probably back, back in the 1900s?
Just show almost a Linklater meets Wolf of Wall Street. Well, movie about nothing, but because I'm imagining that these crews, because of the transitory nature of that job and the town itself, I'm sure it was wild.
Wild.
Like no rules. What are they going to do? Arrest me? I got to get back on the train tomorrow.
And Sanderson already has its feet in media because if you remember, No Country for Old Men takes place, that original town of Sanderson. And then in his other Border Trilogy book, Something Plains, they end up in Sanderson at a point in the book.
Yeah,
That's like a big part of Cormac McCarthy's
just be pretty geography. Interesting, like train people, with I'm for towns that. People.
Copyrighted. It's, you can take it. That's our idea.
Nice.
One Night in Sanderson.
One Night in Sanderson.
Okay.
That's our. That's a Texas production.
It's a Texas
I'm
production.
I'm not pitching that to anybody else.
Oh, that's ours.
Starring Timothy Olyphant. Anyway,
it would have to star Timothy. It would have to be either Timothy Olyphant or Glenn Powell Jr.
I'll give Glenn a shot.
You would have to,
but I would have to tell him how to do his job,
right? Which would be annoying
because I'd have to step in and be like, "Glenn, this is what
what it looks like.
Yeah,
just do it this way.
Just come on, be like."
What we would do is we would say it was him, but you would. Model it every time, and then we would just hot swap.
We would have to fake. It would be a deep fake. Mm-hmm. Just like here, stand in front of the camera. We got now. I'll
technically
step in.
Be a very shallow fake. Dude.
There you go. You want to hear about our baddest of the week?
Who's our Texas?
He's the badass of the week.
Where is he?
Who is he?
Who is it?
Who's
our
boy?
Badass of the week?
Where is Ocean Avenue? All right, so our Texas badass of, we are unhinged on this pop punk stuff.
I'm gonna have to listen to the new Fall Out Boy.
It's all the
album.
Yeah. So our Texas badass of the week is H.L. Hunt.
H.L. Hunt.
H.L. Hunt.
Okay.
And he is one of the most horrible, fascinating people I've ever read about.
Okay.
And I need to shout out my friend Shane. He's who told me about the Hunt family.
Okay.
So H.L. Hunt is
related to R.L. Stein at all?
No. Ha, funny.
Thank you.
And not J.K. Rowling either.
Fair.
Or J.R. Tolkien. Or E.W. White. Anyway, so H.L. Hunt was born in Illinois, but ended up in East Texas. And he won around in his 20s. He won about $30,000 gambling.
Mm-hmm.
And he took that $30,000 and turned it into what is today a $4.1 billion oil empire.
Wow.
So, you know the show Dallas?
Yeah, it's about him.
Roughly based on him.
Okay.
So he builds this massive oil empire by buying up oil fields and oil companies in East Texas during the East Texas oil boom.
So he was buying during the boom.
Yeah. It could stop there.
Yeah.
Instead, he marries one woman.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let's reverse engineer. He ends up having 15 children by three different wives.
Wow.
Two of which didn't know about each other. So here's what happens. He marries a woman in East Texas and has his first kids.
Cool.
He ends up having a secret marriage with a secret family in Florida.
Okay.
First wife dies. So he's like, fine. Hey, kids, I've been married the whole time. So he tells those kids about this family. And then he ends up having a third wife. A third secret marriage with his secretary in Louisiana.
Okay.
So while he has the second wife, he has the third wife and has more kids by her.
What?
This wife finds out about it.
Sure.
Divorces him. So then he tells those kids, hey, by the way.
BT dubs.
Remember how y'all were saying, I did this.
Did it again.
Look, I'm consistent.
Hey, man. I'm not a good guy, but I am consistent.
I am consistent. You can color me consistent.
Look, you can call me a lot of things. Unpredictable is not one of them.
Exactly. So while he's building his empire, he's also spreading his seed, clearly.
Mm-hmm.
So he ends up having just this massive interrelated family of like 15 different kids by three different wives, the youngest of which, Lamar Hunt, goes on to start the American Football League, the AFL, and came up with the idea for the first Super Bowl. So that happened. He lobotomized his oldest son.
Whoa.
Because he was being too erratic to take over the family business. So he pretty much institutionalized him.
Dude, thank God that you couldn't do that whenever I was growing up.
Same, dude. Yeah, that emo phase would have not lasted very long.
So, I'm sorry, you like listening to your music how loud?
How loud? So yeah, like just this crazy oil tycoon, dude. Gets even worse.
Okay.
He potentially is tied to the JFK assassination as the initiator.
Assassination?
assassination.
There you go.
The JFK assassination.
He's tied.
People
to it.
Overheard him at a party talking about how John F. Kennedy will embarrass me no more starting tomorrow. Tomorrow being when he landed in Dallas and he was shot and killed.
Oh my goodness.
In Dallas. So he. Nothing consequential. Nothing concrete,
right.
But a lot of reports very about how he hated JFK and that he did want him dead.
In fairness, he was an oil tycoon.
But here's the funnier part. Well, it's not funny. Interesting part. Because JFK was a Democrat,
yeah.
But he was a Northeastern Democrat.
That's true.
This was, we're still in the 40s, 50s, 60s when the Southern Democratic Party has ties to the KKK.
Yeah, at this point.
And so does he. He was a member of the incredibly racist KKK-associated Democratic Party in the South. So he did not like that JFK was a more conservative Democrat because he wasn't racist. There's also reports that he was likely a Grand Wizard.
Likely.
Again.
Well, the thing was, he had his KKK organization here in Florida, but he also had one in
a secret
and they didn't know about it.
None of them knew about it.
He was a wizard in both of them.
man, I love what we can make it fun.
I can make it fun.
So yeah, that's H.L. Hunt. Badass, hey, not because he was
I just
good.
Want to point out that grown men who wear sheets is inherently hilarious.
Is hilarious.
It's inherently funny.
And clearly shows that you're a
puppy. With some time.
But anyway. So yeah, that's H.L. Hunt. He has a bunch of kids and a bunch of grandkids, and they never have to worry about money because of all the lawsuits, all the oil, everything.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's H.L. Hunt.
Imagine being like a grandkid, like of the second marriage.
Yeah. Of the middle one
where you're just like, yeah, my granddad was this crazy oil guy who wore sheets and like gave me a lot of money.
He might've killed JFK.
Might've paid somebody to kill JFK.
I donate some of it. Cause
he have ties to Oswald? Is that like,
they can't find any ties.
This is a podcast. We have to talk about the JFK assassination.
At some point it was going to come up.
It's part of the job. It was going to come up. He was killed in Dallas. It's a thing.
Do you
think it was one shooter?
No.
Okay.
Look, I'm way more conspiratorial than I like to put on.
I know.
I'm already white. I don't need to make it worse.
I know.
You know? So yeah, they can't tie him directly to Oswald. But again, there's multiple people that were at this one party in Dallas that heard him like belligerently talking about, I won't have to worry about JFK starting tomorrow. It was all this like.
And only four of them were married to him.
Yeah, I mean, probably. if anything, he spat game for sure.
Dude had game.
No, I can't imagine how horrible that life was.
Honestly. I just can't imagine how bored you have to be to purposely complicate your life that much.
I can't imagine how sadistic you have to be to hurt people that badly. But
yeah, that's true.
So I mean, because I feel like at all the horrible stuff aside, he seems like a clear case of can't get enough itis. Just.
Mm-hmm.
As soon as I get this much money, I can settle. No, as soon as I get the wife,
I wonder what the psychology of that is. Because like, I've hurt people before, right? We all have. And I feel bad when I do. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if certain people don't. Like, just like this thing in some people where they don't have that guilt.
Well, aren't they called sociopaths?
I think that's a sociopath,
right?
I think. Because the difference between a sociopath and a psychopath, I think, is violence.
I thought it was sociopath doesn't feel anything. A psychopath can feel.
Sociopath can.
Yeah. The episode of House where the chick doesn't feel anything. Right. House is like, you're a sociopath.
Yeah. Ironic versus hypocritical. Yeah.
He doesn't call her a psychopath. He calls her a sociopath. He might've been a sociopath.
He might've been.
Or an addict. Or
an addict or both.
Yeah.
A lot of sociopaths are addicts.
True.
Of some kind.
All addicts are sociopaths.
I don't think all.
Liquid death for all you addicts out there.
Addicted to liquid death. Murder your thirst.
That turkey. Oh.
Liquid death. The Oswald of waters.
The H.L. Hunt.
No.
Pay us. Anyway, that's H.L. Hunt, the Texas somewhat badass, interesting character of the week. You want to talk about dating?
Yeah, let's talk about dating.
Smooth transitions.
What's a segue?
Segues are weird. $10 to anybody who gets the reference.
Oh, wow.
You know the reference.
Dude, I do. We're on the internet. So, you know.
See what Reddit
says. We'll see what happens.
Anyway, cool shirt, by the way.
Thanks, man. You too. I like that.
Thank you. So, we're talking about dating a little bit because I don't know if it's.
Sure. Well, and at some point, a friend of the show, Welcome to the Peasantry, Charts by Charlotte. Charlotte is going to come on at some point.
Yeah.
And she's got this amazing kind of like charted dating experience thing on social media. We should like look, we'll plug it maybe
right here
if we can. And we do want to have her on at some point to talk about the like various eccentricities of dating. Yeah. But we wanted to set the stage and just talk about what it's like to date secularly and Christian-wise.
Not non-secularly.
Non-secularly.
Yeah.
Because we have two very different experiences. Yeah. As, and talk about the overlap of the current dating culture and how it's starting to bend a little bit toward like Christian dating.
Almost. Yeah. Well, and it was sparked because I saw that good friend of the show, Chris Williamson, has been posting a lot about dating, and there's all this research coming out about
in between putting Visine in his eyes.
Exactly. In between Never Blinking, he has been putting out some podcasts and some content about like
modern dating statistics.
Modern dating statistics.
And it's very interesting.
Well, it's super interesting because it's showing that there is such a thing as having too many sex partners and the implications of that.
The implications of having certain amounts of sexual partners increases your likelihood of divorce significantly.
Yeah, and research about moving in together too early increases divorce. And
right.
Showing that people who commit to one partner for the rest of their life are
have a higher likelihood of staying with that
partner. Staying with that person and are significantly happier. And it's not just him, but his posts have been interesting to me because I'm coming from a Christian dating background where very fortunate. I met my wife doing ministry and we were blessed to have a pastor on campus at the college ministry that we attended sometimes that actually put a pretty heavy emphasis on dating, on engagement, on marriage. And there were parts of it that at the time seemed very corny, just the way that we talked about Christian courtship, so to speak, and Christian dating really did verge on this line of this is almost funny how conservative we're being with it. I'm honestly like just
right.
Even in the moment, there was some like oddities to it at the time, but we still committed to dating.
What's something that struck you as odd at the time?
I mean, it didn't even seem odd at the time, but I look back, but you know, me and my roommates, we were all part of the same ministry. Mm-hmm. We had a rule in our house. You can't be in your room alone with your girlfriend with the door closed. That was just the standard
that's the standard that you guys
kept. That we kept, because from the pulpit, like the pastor would talk about being careful with things like that.
Well, I do want to say that I respect that you had a standard that you kept. I think that was too far, but like
I look back and think that probably was too far in some ways. But I'm trying to set the stage of like that's how serious we did take it, and we were in college.
Yeah,
you know, like we're kind of in this weird place where culturally college is viewed as that's when you hook up with the most people usually,
right?
Or that's when promiscuity and experimenting
for most people, college is when they're gonna do it. That's when.
Meanwhile, I was in a bubble where we were holding ourselves to pretty rigorous standards when it came to how we pursued women, how we dated, how we talked about dating, how we stewarded our sexuality, and in the moments it seemed very strict because we're 20 years old and all we want to do is go behind the corner and bang it out.
Right. Dibs on a sexual steward is a t-shirt.
This is just the way we talk.
I know.
In the building with I'm enjoying it. That's how we talk in there. All right.
No.
You've been going to Red Rocks because you look like it.
I'm actually the new youth pastor at Red Rocks.
But I'm like,
I was on the media team and, you know,
all to I say, felt the call. Oh, God calling me.
Felt the
Austin.
Call, you know,
never mind. just when Christians are like, God called me to Denver, God called me to Austin. No, he didn't. You just think the city's cool and you like need a city. Reason.
Yeah.
It's okay to like things.
Yeah.
Anyway,
just say you like it.
Different soapbox.
Yeah.
So that sort of the bubble we were in, that was the standards we were trying to uphold when it came to dating, when it came to.
Yeah. And to be clear, I really respect that you had a structured way of doing it.
And I appreciate that. And at the time I still am serious about it, but I was very like, this is how we're going to date. Mm-hmm. And this is how dating should be.
Which is actually kind of cool because when you have the framework, it allows you to step in and say, I am holding the standard.
Yeah.
which is good because then as like on the opposite of it, right? Like a woman that you might date gets to look to you and see, yeah, are you going to uphold these standards?
Yeah. Well, and that's one of the things I appreciate from dating that way is I did get to, in a way, lead when it came to, I mean, it wasn't like I was
right
usurping myself over Virginia. That's how we date. But I did get, we got to talk about, these are the standards we want to uphold while we're dating.
Yeah.
And then I had the opportunity outside of marriage to like, see like, can I lead in this way? Can I be the one who's helping us stick to these standards? And if I'm failing at that, what am I doing about it? And that does carry on into engagement. What are the standards we want to have when we're engaged? Right.
Into marriage.
Into marriage. While we're as a couple, what are the standards that we're going to uphold as a family?
Yeah. Well, and there's that old saying, how you do anything is how you do everything.
Exactly.
And it does. I don't know that that's 100% true, but I do know that how you start doing something is how you tend to continue.
It's harder to about face when it comes to these
If things. You just kind of like are floating around, sleeping around, dating this person, dating that person, your lines are kind of messy. It's going to be hard to tighten that up.
Yeah. And so all to say, like, that was how I dated the one girl that I've ever dated, and I'm now married to.
Well, you dated other girls.
Dated other girls. Yeah, but what, like...
You've only had two serious relationships.
Yeah. And one of them was
And one of them you got married to.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, and the other one, I didn't have standards. Honestly, there
were no standards. Yeah. You were just like...
I was a teenager, and it was high school, and it was
That's
why we were dating.
Yeah, like 100%.
She's a great person.
Yeah.
Is still a great person. She's gone on to have a successful career.
Yeah.
Really. But like, we were in high school.
You were in high school.
And we had similar interests.
Yeah.
And then we liked
each other enough.
Yeah. We were in high school.
Yeah.
But it was interesting to have that experience with dating. And one, at the time, see people around me who weren't Christians or maybe were Christians, but not taking that part seriously. And so like the way I was dating seemed was weird. It was very, very conservative compared to hooking up, going to parties, having multiple partners, talking to someone, but also going on dates with this person. It was just different. And then when we got beyond college, my wife and I didn't really have any bad feelings about the way we dated or the culture, but we were definitely like, that was pretty intense.
It's extreme.
As far as the bubble that we, that was pretty intense.
Even for the bubble of A&M, it was intense.
Pretty intense. And there was a while where I didn't so much resent it as I just had some like, did I do
baggage that? Around it?
Yeah. Like, did I do that right? Was it too much? Like, I never looked down on people who weren't dating that way, but it definitely like set us apart. It was just, it made me where I didn't know how to approach conversations about dating with people who weren't Christians because
the way you did it was so different.
So different.
Yeah.
And now I've actually gotten to a place where I'm like, no, I'm so thankful for the way we dated. And frankly, I would recommend it to anybody, even if they're not Christians, because of the standards.
Yeah.
And it's been interesting to see research and influencers in the self-help relations space start to talk about dating in a way that I've heard in the Christian bubble. And it's just, I'm sitting there listening to it and I'm thinking like, oh, you're saying what Pastor Ben Stewart said, just it's not in reference to scripture. And so there's one part of me that thinks, can we go a step? There's a Christian
in
you. I'm a Christian, not the Christian part of me, but as a Christian, there's that part of my heart, my soul that thinks, can we go a step further? There are things within the belief
step further that you would go?
I don't think it's even further. Can we add God to the conversation? I think that's what I think is because it literally is like, you're talking about something that is in scripture, like the standards that you're laying out or the research you're showing that is showing that.
Well, to be fair, scripture doesn't talk about dating.
True.
It says one thing about dating.
Well, it doesn't really say one thing.
Well, it says one thing about dating or choosing your partner. It says choose a partner that you would go to war with.
Yeah.
That's what it says.
Be equally yoked, yada, yada. There's the book.
Well, and that's in reference to marriage.
Yeah. And there's Song of Solomon that's talking about engagement and marriage. But the reason I'm so thankful that we had specifically Ben Stewart is he's the only pastor who I've ever heard in the dating, because every pastor has their dating series. And usually it's bad. I'll be the first to say, usually it's bad. Usually it's off base. Usually it's not
deaf
helpful.
Ears.
Yeah. It's the opposite of helpful. But Ben was the first one to say, first off, the Bible says nothing about dating. That's why this is so confusing.
Yeah.
Like, that's why this is a really weird...
Well, and contextually, there's no reason the Bible would say anything about dating. Dating did not happen.
Not really.
It didn't exist.
People got married back then
to unite
families.
Yeah.
It was basically business deals.
Yeah.
For the most part, you ended up with somebody because it was good for both families.
Both families.
Usually the dude's family more than the other one.
And you might fall in love, you might not. But love wasn't a part of it.
There are still cultures today that do arranged marriages.
Yeah. And a lot of cultures are like, why would you marry for love?
Right.
Like what
do you mean?
What is that?
Like, why would you do that?
But coming back to, because that's a whole other conversation. Well,
it's not. It's the same conversation.
Kind of.
No, directly. Because we're talking about how to date, what's going on in dating. And
you're right.
Within the context of like Christian dating, you have to mention that if you are creating rules for dating, the Bible actually doesn't give you much guidance.
Yeah. That. You are correct.
Yeah.
And so, and that's where it gets weird
mm-hmm.
because people try to pull other scripture to like,
inform
what dating is. When I do think what it comes down to is whatever scripture says about being a loving, good person applies to dating, but not because it says when you date, do this. It just says when you love Jesus,
you love other people,
Yeah.
That's be nice.
Yeah. It comes down to respect and kindness and care and selflessness,
yeah,
which I understand as parts of other religions as well. I just happen to believe this one
mm-hmm.
section of belief.
Yeah.
So I guess when I say step further, what I mean is there's that part of me as a Christian that knows the joy, my experience.
Sure.
Knows the joys and the wonder and the relationship that I've found in a relationship with God
mm-hmm.
and have seen the wonder and the intimacy that it's created with my wife.
Right.
And because that's my one experience, how can I not want that for other people? Especially when I'm seeing research come out about basically standardless dating or whatever modern dating that's showing how ineffective and bad it can be.
Mm-hmm.
And knowing despite some of the baggage that can come with like Christian dating or despite some of the missteps and misrepresentations that plenty of churches and pastors have made about Christian dating.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of joy and wonder to be found in like centering a life on God and centering a relationship and a pursuit of a marriage on God.
Yeah.
And that's my experience. And so it's kind of like, well, how can I not want that for other people? Especially if we're almost there. Like, it's just interesting having heard all these sermons and read these books about God-centered Christian dating and see like secular data back it up. Cause then I think, wait, it's just funny from a like, oh, I've heard this before.
Right.
And it's, I'm watching like 28-year-olds hear it for the first time. And so there's that part of that's like, this is almost funny because.
Yeah. How could it not be funny? Because you're seeing the secular world start promoting tenets that you followed that people looked at as weird.
Yeah.
And that's why it's
and
funny.
That are kind
of objectively, weird. That's hilarious.
Yeah. It's very funny.
It makes sense because what you have happening is, man. Really, we've only been dating on an equal playing ground or an equal-ish playing ground for like, what, 20 years maybe?
If
30,
that.
If
it's
that.
It's still pretty new.
It's still pretty new. Yeah. So there's going to be some missteps. There's going to be some how, like, what is this? You know, how do you date? Because there used to be like rules for courtship.
Yeah.
You could buy books. Like, this is how you court somebody.
This is how. This is how.
This is the societally like prescribed.
No matter what class you are, no matter
what. This is kind of how it goes.
Region you live in.
There were some basic things.
Yeah.
That doesn't really exist anymore. Mm-hmm. And so you end up in this left swing, like this wide swing this way. I don't want to say left, like this swing this way
loose.
On like, you know what? The world is your oyster. Yeah. Have fun, you know, kind of like
I keep coming
summer
back
of
to
love.
Like structureless. Like,
yeah, structureless.
Standardless. Dating.
Date as many people as you can. And definitely the apps messed it up a lot.
Yes.
Because now suddenly it's just a meat market.
Yeah.
And it purely is.
Especially when you're in it.
Am I physically attracted to this person?
Yeah.
And that's your first basis.
You're saying. One, you get to.
And it really messes with
one. You get to evaluate a potential partner before you even meet them. You get to evaluate.
Right.
You're trying to evaluate intimacy before you actually have the one thing that produces intimacy, which is proximity.
And I get it. Like that was always going to happen on some level. But I think the natural reaction to what happened with dating apps and what that caused statistically and you know, all the other things that we've talked about. Check out the Chris Williamson podcast on dating. It's really good.
Yeah.
He goes deep into like the very statistics on number of men not having sex, you know, how marriages last longer, if it's less partners, like really deep into it. And it's really good. back to, we're in this position where people are craving meaning.
Yeah.
And part of that is we've taken religion out of a lot of things.
Yeah.
And I don't, I'm not here to say that that's good or bad. I know your opinion on it, but
I am not religious. I just love Jesus.
I think in absence of religion, you will search for meaning.
Yeah.
And within dating, I see a lot of that coming to the forefront.
Mm-hmm.
So it's no longer are you just kind of like vibing.
Yeah.
You're getting really...
Say vibing in the car all the time.
You're not vibing anymore.
Okay. Continue.
Okay. And that's still happening, but
yeah.
People are getting really intentional.
Yeah.
About how they date.
Yeah.
And
that's the right word. And that's why it's funny for me.
Yeah.
Because that was every sermon, every bit of advice within the Christian bubble was be intentional.
Yeah.
No matter what else you do, be intentional with the way you date.
Which can be confusing because if you don't know what the intention is and you have nothing to structure it with,
yeah.
You end up with like, you think you're drawing boundaries, but you're just being an asshole. You know, or like you think that you're dating intentionally, but really you're just like throwing your trauma into
out front. You're having a trauma fest.
You're trauma bonding with everybody
rather
than actually bonding with somebody. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So you have some confusion still, but to your point, it is funny to see that swing back to we want a structure that means something within dating.
Yeah.
I don't use the apps. I've never been on the apps.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
that's actually not true. I did get on for a bit that we didn't follow.
Before we had a podcast.
Before we had a podcast.
Yeah.
But I did it that one time.
Oh, and Andrew's.
Yeah. That was hilarious.
So funny.
But I've never used that because I just feel like it's not a good way to make connections.
Yeah. And it's not.
So also being somebody who dates like pretty intentionally.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting to hear stories and see the changes because I've seen the change in the way people date, even in the short time frame that I've been active.
Yeah. How have you seen it change?
So just to fill the viewers and listeners in,
are you cool talking about this?
Yeah, I can talk about this. Cool. I'm not going to go deep or like super specific.
What's her name? Sorry.
So I was a bit of a late bloomer. Didn't really date in high school. Can't call it. Didn't really have any relationships there. Didn't really date in college, didn't have any relationships. I worked a lot and was awkward. Didn't lose my virginity until I was 23. And that was,
I was 25,
very end of college.
Yeah.
and then when I moved to Los Angeles, I dated very briefly, found, somebody I loved a lot and was with her for 7 years.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the majority of my relationship is like a lot of people in their mid 20s, they're figuring out relationships. They're dating around. That's when they're learning how to date.
Yeah.
I was in a relationship, so I didn't do that, right? I was focused on building something. When that ended, and I came back to Texas, I took some time off and got back into the dating pool eventually. It had some fun, but that first step in, it was pretty loose. Like, people were kind of flighty. Like, you couldn't get a bead on what they wanted out of something. And if you asked, they would kind of dodge the question. Like they were very squirrely.
Mm-hmm.
And I went on several dates.
Yeah.
Some good, some okay.
Like part of it was just to get over.
Part of it was a very hard breakup.
Just
to get back out there.
Yeah.
And flex the social skill.
Total immersion.
Because dating
therapy.
Is like you shouldn't just date to have sex or physical contact. Mm-hmm. I really do think there's more outcomes than that possible from dating. You can make a new friend. You can find a new friend's circle. Like, you know, just have a good time. And if you click, you know, go forward with that. So that first kind of round was very loose.
Yeah.
And I think part of it is where you are in life as well, but it seemed very unstructured. The people I was running into and going on dates with, it seemed like, just very ethereal, like floating around, whatever, nothing too serious. End up in a relationship for a little bit. That ends coming back into the dating pool. Once I'm back into it, not really dating a lot of people, but when I do, it feels much more structured, much more serious.
Mm-hmm.
Not in a bad way. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I'm a different person, so I'm also leading differently.
Yeah.
And enjoying the dating process.
Mm-hmm.
But I can hear in the language, people are talking about like, what is your timeline?
Yeah.
They're very upfront with like, what, you know, what do you want from this?
I'm sorry, but like, it's like, that is Christian dating. When I was 20 years old, when I was 20 years old, that was how we talked about dating.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just interesting to observe
the funny part to me.
People in their late 20s and 30s yeah. are just now starting to talk that way.
So my opinion, again, remains, it was so unstructured for so long. Mm. This is a hard swing the other direction where we're trying to create a framework.
Yeah.
And really the only framework in America, at mm-hmm. least, is a Christian framework.
Yeah.
That is how
it's because it's the right ones.
Sure. In absence of a defined God, mm-hmm. people will seek spirituality.
Yeah.
That's
why we're wired for worship.
We're wired for some type of worship. Yeah. You are either going to worship something on purpose or on accident.
Yeah. But you're going to worship.
But you're going to worship something.
Yeah.
It's up to you. And I think we're in a situation where dating has become a form of spirituality for some people. And I don't mean that in a bad way.
Yeah.
I think it's just how it's happening.
Yeah. And people wear more beaded necklaces.
Well, I think a lot of pressure is on it. I think that as we're trying to like build communities mm-hmm. and find that meaning,
yeah.
there's a lot of meaning being placed on relationships, which is why people like Chris Williamson reverse engineer them.
Yeah.
And it's like, why are we dating the way we're dating? Yeah. What is happening?
Why is this swing happening?
Why is this swing happening?
Yeah.
And in my opinion, it is the absence of spirituality.
Yeah.
And it is people prescribing it into mm-hmm. places where they normally
would. Yeah, they're injecting meaning into something.
They're injecting meaning into something.
Yeah.
And it's kind of a top-up approach.
Yeah, and I think it's a good thing because at the end of our lives, there is going to be no currency more important than the relationships in our relationship bank. And there is no relationship, human-wise, more important than that you have with your spouse.
Agreed.
And I'm very hopeful that this is going to be a wave that sort of makes people happier, leads people to changes the stats, right? Changes the stats from people are getting married later to people are actually getting married a little bit earlier now, or the divorce rates start falling finally.
I hope so.
Because there is so much joy we were talking about earlier. When you choose to love somebody, choose to love somebody, covenantly commit to love one person for the rest of your life. For the last probably 5 years, that has culturally sounded like the death of independence. It mm-hmm. has sounded like too hard to even try, too difficult to even fathom. It's not worth it because it's the me show.
Yeah.
And I really hope that even if God is not a part of it for some people, I'm hoping that this is still a swing toward people realizing there is no endeavor more worth it and more wonderful than giving yourself to somebody selflessly every day, every moment for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
For me, preferably within the confines of actual marriage, because if I hear one more roommate call their roommate a partner, I'm going to shoot myself, but
I mean,
sorry, had to swing.
Sure, back. Sure.
Got to get humorous.
Got to get humorous.
Deflecting.
what do you guys run a business together?
Kind of. And just really quick, to anybody from the Christian dating bubble or who has been hurt by the church that's listening to this, mm-hmm. whether it's because of whether it was a message about relationship, about your sexuality, about dating, I cannot apologize on anyone's behalf because I'm not the one that hurt you, but I am sorry that you were hurt within a place by people that were supposed to love you. That sucks.
Yeah.
I do believe there is still wonder and love and joy to be found in God himself. And that's all I'm going to say about that.
I mean, I would agree with that.
So,
you know, it's always the institution, not the spirit
always.
Of something. Always.
So,
you know, people mess things up.
Yeah. God doesn't.
I fully agree with you. I think, you know, we had a good conversation about what love is mm-hmm. and that part of it is choosing love.
Yeah.
That love is two people willing to work,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Yeah.
And that kind of beauty of putting yourself aside, knowing that you're in this for my growth, I'm in mm-hmm. this for your growth, and we're building this other thing that is its own thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I do think that it works best if you have a shared spirituality.
Yeah. Oh, whatever that
honestly, whatever that is, I think it works best if mm-hmm. if you can center that around something bigger than both of them.
Yeah, you marry the person you fight about little stuff with, not about who God is.
Honestly, yeah.
On like, if it's Buddha, and
that's great.
Shock.
As long as you agree.
Yeah, as long as you agree. Because if not, it's gonna not be great.
As long as you're not one of these like new wave Buddhists who don't even know what the actual tenets are and just use it as like a cop out to be lazy.
You're like, I meditate, so I'm Buddhist. And you're like,
I don't think that's how that works.
Yeah.
I don't think you understand.
I don't think you get it.
I don't think you get it. I think
so,
you're just lazy.
All to say, just interesting.
Just interesting
to see the language around dating and a relationship start to shift mm-hmm. really quick. Just suddenly it was like,
hey,
we're doing it wrong.
Technology is changing everything.
Yeah.
And as soon as the stats are out, like you have people in power who have, for the first time ever, like real influence over people's behavior.
Yeah.
Not just their opinions, the way they behave.
Yeah.
People like Tim Ferriss, Joe Rogan, Dr. Huberman. Yeah. Yeah. There you go. I don't, I'm showing my, my tastes here, but I don't know the female movers in those spaces as much.
Cody Sanchez
with business. I mean, I listen to Cody
Well, I mean,
Sanchez.
She gives relationship
she
advice.
She does, yeah.
Like in accordance with like what works for her and her husband quite often.
Which is
good advice.
Yeah. And we've met both of them and they're awesome people. They're amazing people.
Her husband
people.
Could murk me.
With a napkin.
Yeah. She can murk me, honestly.
Honestly, yeah.
Not because all women are weak, but.
we know what Gunnar thinks about women. So, He's in the same camp as the Chinese.
Comedy podcast.
Comedy.
Yeah. Any other thoughts about? Thanks for letting me bring this
up.
Yeah,
of course.
I Instagram storied some stuff out a few weeks ago,
and the
response was just interesting because it was people, non-Christians, that were like, "This is interesting," and I agree with it, and people that aren't Christians anymore that were like, "Actually, this is kind of true." Like,
yeah. And to be clear, I think some of the tenets of like Christian dating go a little too far.
Sure.
But you know what? That's kind of the point.
Yeah. And when they go, for the most part, they go too far in a way that's funny, not in a like.
Yeah. For the most part.
There have been pastors, there have been churches that have gotten it wrong. That is true.
Absolutely.
But the core of like Christian dating tenets or whatever you want to call it, the structure you can find there is helpful. I agree. Helpful in terms of figuring out if the person you're with is the one person you want to be with and can fight with and can live with for the rest of your life.
Cause I don't at this point in my life believe in the one. Mm-hmm. I believe in multiple ones.
Yeah.
And I think
Red Rocks is going to fire you for that. Go to Hillsong. They'll take
you. There you go. Hillsong will take me. There's always a Catholic church. Mormons?
Their views on dating are weird.
Oh man, I don't even really remember what I was gonna say about
you're
fine. That was
it.
Funny.
Sorry.
That was funny. Overall, I think we can agree that the tenets that seem to work are the ones that are don't have sex immediately.
Yeah. Save it for marriage if you can help
it. If you can help it.
Yeah.
Don't, you know, be too promiscuous.
Yeah.
That seems to hurt.
Mm-hmm.
Make sure that you share values.
Yeah.
And spend time with each other intentionally with the purpose of growing.
Yeah.
Like, don't just hang out and have fun, although that is kind of the
Do. Yeah, you should have fun.
But you need to learn how to grow with each other.
And communicate. And disagree.
And that's part of the tenets, right?
Yeah.
Is like, we are intentionally setting aside this time to check in with, in your case, God.
Yeah.
In a secular sense, like the relationship.
Yeah, with
right?
us.
I mean, one of the big things I've seen is the popularization of like monthly check-ins.
Yeah.
Which personally I love.
I
like a good performance review.
A funny thing from the Christian dating thing on this, and then I got an opinion, I got to go. But
do you have any more questions for me dating wise, since we're talking about it?
Not off the top of my head. Do you have any for me?
Mm-mm.
It's funny seeing some like dating coaches.
Yeah, yeah.
Talk about monthly check-ins. Because from the Christian bubble perspective, that was something reserved for like marriage.
Marriage, yeah.
Like, it was almost like, no,
don't do it.
No check-ins. That's a little too...
Yeah.
That's a little too intimate.
Yeah.
Like, you don't
that's
need...
hilarious.
I mean, there was almost like, well, you're not... It was funny because it'd be like, well, you're not married.
Yeah.
You don't need to be so intentional that you're evaluating each other's performance with each other.
A friend of ours was talking, Christian friend, good dude. He was like, you know, we had our first monthly check-in and it had only been a month. Like, we didn't have anything to talk about really.
And that's why I think there's some validity to like,
well, yeah, for sure.
Hold off
but
on
dude,
that.
People get married so fast. Like it's the same principle.
For sure.
Yeah,
Again, just funny seeing that the advice for dating is monthly check-in. Whereas my advice was stay away from monthly check-ins and don't you dare pray together.
Honestly, wait, don't pray together?
Yeah, don't pray. The ministry we're involved in, the leader of that ministry, because we were on the same ministry team, we had to get permission to date.
Sure.
So we're on the
weird, I mean, that's like whatever.
We're on the weird part. And we had to have a sit down with him.
That's weird enough.
We had to have a sit down with him and we are dating. Mm-hmm. Is that okay since we're on the same ministry team and working with kids?
What if he said no?
I look back,
you know,
and I'm
like, back, like,
if he had said no, he just would have been like, okay, anyway, and then lied about dating. Yeah. So
yeah,
there you go.
There you go.
Again, weirder part.
Yeah.
But the last thing he looks at me, he points at me, goes, the one thing I will tell you, young man, don't you dare ever pray with her until you're married. Because that is the most intimate, wonderful thing. And there were, I understand what he was doing.
Sure.
I really understand what the advice was. It was the way he did it was very intense. And I was like, okay, I won't pray
with her. Yeah, I won't pray with
her. I wasn't dying to pray.
I'm gonna.
Part of me was like, yeah, that'd be kind of weird if I was like, all right, let's go pray together.
Yeah, yeah.
Right now.
Right now.
it was, I understand now being married, praying together every morning, every night, like that. That is very intimate because we're sharing parts of our soul with each other and with God. But we did pray together before we got married, and it was totally
fine. It was totally fine.
It was actually,
dude,
good. So
abortions were still legal, so it's fine.
Oh, God. All right. Hope everyone has a great rest of your day.
Oh, man.
Feel free to send in your, feel free to send in your thoughts about Christianity, dating, God, and
abortions.
Abortions. And we hope that you all have a great day. Make sure to buy our shirts at texaspod.com. Follow, like, subscribe. Hit up all the videos. We appreciate every one of y'all so much. Bye, y'all.